It's stupid.
It's pointless.
It's irrelevant.
It's Things That Matter with Mike and Nev. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Things That Matter with Mike and Nev. I'm Nevin Barich. He's Michael Feldman. Mike, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull just came out a few days ago, on track to make $126 million through Sunday. I mean,
something
second biggest, you know, Memorial Day movie ever.
Right.
But here's my thing. You know, we're not going to give you any spoilers here because, you know, neither Mike or I have not seen it. But I mean, it's gotten good reviews. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got, you know, pretty decent, not really kind of going anywhere. But my question is this: is Harrison Ford too old to play Indiana Jones? I mean, do they ignore that fact? Do they embrace that fact? That, to me, when I see it, is going to make or break the movie.
That's a great point. You know, the thing, he's 65.
Right? He's not 65.
He is 65 years
that
old.
That guy is 65.
You know, I read a review of the movie that pointed out, I'm forgetting who, what, I think it was from The New Yorker, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that came out from that was, Harrison Ford is one of these actors who doesn't look like he gets older. Or he looks like he gets older. He just gets more wrinkles.
Well, you know, it's funny. Here's the thing. I actually saw a YouTube video on him a few days ago that a friend sent to me. I forget what the YouTube video was about. It was some charity thing. His shirt was off, and I'm a heterosexual, okay?
But, yes, we both are, by the way, just to note that.
Just point that out. But, okay, that is not the body of a 65-year-old. I mean, he's pretty toned for 65.
That's amazing stuff.
He's better shape than me, and he's more than twice my age. That's scary.
Well, you know, when you're Indiana Jones,
I suppose.
You've got to keep it up.
So maybe they can pull it off. Maybe they don't have to embrace his age. You know, maybe the fact that he's, you know, a senior citizen and can get the, you know, the specials at Coco's, you know, 55 and older for the burgers. I mean, maybe they can ignore that, you know, unlike, you know, Sylvester Stallone in the last Rocky movie,
right,
where they had to embrace his age to make that a credible film.
Well, the other thing to remember about Indiana Jones, he's a professor.
Mm.
Right? You know, that's a factor.
Now, I always forget that part,
well,
by the
that's because it never comes up. But, you know, but he is a professor. And the thing with Indiana Jones is, you know, him being older, okay, right? It works out. I mean, a professor, you have old professors.
Professors, right? are typically old. I actually respect a professor more when he's of age.
Indeed. And the thing is, and this is the interesting thing, you know, they are suggesting that Indiana Jones is going to be sort of a secondary character in the next one. If they
There's
the going to
be
one.
A next one.
Well, George Lucas was hinting. There,
well, yeah. let's hope it doesn't take 19 years for this next one to kind of come out.
I don't think Harrison Ford will be in it if it takes 19 years.
That's true, yeah. For his body, he may, you know, with modern science, I mean, he may still be with us, and he may look 35 by that time.
I believe they were saying, however, it's Shia LaBeouf, right?
I
believe he will be the next main star of it if they make a film.
Interesting,
movie.
Interesting. Well, one last thing about Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford. You know, Harrison Ford, he still looks great. He's got to upgrade over Calista Flockhart. I mean, he's got to. I mean, his girlfriend, she's just not, doesn't do it for
That's
me. Doesn't do
point.
It for him. Talk about someone who's holding on to like a modicum of fame. What's that show, Ally McBeal?
Yeah.
You know, is that any Calista Flockhart? Is that any, I haven't remembered.
I'm sure.
Whatever. I mean, sure.
We're heterosexual.
Yeah, exactly. he's got the body, 65. Upgrade Harrison, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You're hotter than ever with the last Indiana Jones movie. You know, this may be your last big run. You know, take advantage.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I say. So now, another topic, and this actually came out right after we finished the first podcast. You know, this was breaking news afterwards. Tony Romo, Jessica Simpson, no more. Mike, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'll say this. I mean, it's sad when anyone breaks up, right?
That's very touching. That's very, very touching.
Thank you.
When a relationship ends, we should all pause.
However, there are certain relationships in which it's just not a shock.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you watch it, and it just it's gonna end. You have a feeling.
And it's funny; these relationships always seem to end right after there are rumors of marriage.
Right?
There's all the talk. You know, oh, they might be getting married. They're doing this, they're doing that, and then it's over.
This is true.
Splits.
And the thing is, I mean, Jessica Simpson has had some of the most high profile relationships I can remember,
and
I mean,
TV shows about those relationships.
Newlyweds was quite a show, and did they ever work out?
They never did.
No.
I mean, and you know, it's really, you know, Drew Lachey, I think, did not work out. I think it was ultimately her fault. I think she was the one who kind of got bored. That's what I understand.
Yep.
You know, didn't work out with John Mayer. Did not work out, obviously, with Tony Romo. And if I'm Tony Romo, I've got to be honest, I think it's a good move by him. I mean, he's a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys,
right?
Okay? You know, Jessica Simpson is Jessica Simpson. Have you ever seen, you know, Dukes of Hazzard? I mean, you know, damn, you know. But that said, she hasn't done anything in a while. Right. You know, her sister's kind of outshining her lately. You know, Ashley Simpson, you know, she just got married. You know, just talking about the pregnancy on the way. She got, you know, some CDs that have been out. So, you know, Jessica hasn't been doing much in a while. You know, it's time for Tony to kind of move beyond, I mean, and really take advantage of his high-profile status.
You know what? The topic we were just talking about, you know, moving on for Harrison Ford.
It's the same thing for Tony Romo.
Exactly. You know, they're both... You know, they're both in a strange way. I mean, I don't know if I could quite call Harrison Ford in his prime, but, you know...
He just looks it.
He looks it. He's certainly enjoying a... What's the right word here? Renaissance,
ooh,
perhaps?
Good word.
Thank you.
Good word.
Yep, it's more than two or three syllables. And, you know,
actually, it's not, but...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Anyways.
But still good word.
You know, I try. But regardless, you know, this is a situation where... It's good to try new things, and it's also good when you realize that, you know, you're a strong man and you could get something else and something better. Go for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kudos to you, Tony. Good luck to you. Now, came across this a couple days ago, and I'll tell you right now, I am not a fan of hockey. I think hockey's a stupid sport. You know, I'm an American. I like my baseball. I like my football. I like my basketball. I like my boxing. Okay? Hockey just not doesn't do it for me. But apparently, the National Hockey League, a couple days ago, upheld a ruling banning the practice in Detroit of tossing octopus. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, your fake stuffed animal octopus. I'm talking about the real thing with the eight legs or arms or whatever you call it.
Tentacles.
They banned the practice of throwing it onto the ice, and apparently this is something that's been going on for over 50 years. It started, I think, in 1952. Had these workers at a local fish market. They tossed an octopus on the ice for good luck. Lord knows why, but the Detroit Red Wings went on to win the Stanley Cup that year, and a stupid tradition was born. And it only took the NHL 56 years to determine, you know what, this probably isn't sanitary. I mean, this is a stupid. I mean, I've heard of, you know, there's a terrible towel in Pittsburgh, but I mean, the twirling the octopus. I mean. It's a live octopus, Mike.
You know, the thing is, I mean, you know, this is funny. I mean, to bring up another sport that we don't, you know, particularly love here in America, soccer, or for you,
did
the
you
rest of the world.
Real quick, did you see any of that Chelsea Manchester United game there? But you know, everybody outside of America was talking about a couple days ago.
Right.
And I came across the game while I was at work a few days ago, and you know, huge game being talked about throughout most of the world. And I was just bored to tears. Mm-hmm. It was 0-0, back and forth, back and forth.
Right.
Player runs here, player runs there, here, there, 0-0. And there was still no scoring in the game until you got to the penalty kicks.
Yep.
Why is this exciting? I just don't get it.
It's similar to hockey.
It really is.
It's a similar kind of thing, you know, where just no scoring, you know, very low. I mean, you could argue, and you might punch me here, and I understand, that baseball has potential for the low scoring thing, but I don't know. There's something
different. But the thing with baseball, I mean, first of all, it's the great American pastime. To me, baseball is the atmosphere as much as anything else. And I, as much of a baseball fan as I am, it's hard sometimes for me to watch a game on TV. But to be there live, I mean, you have the ambiance. You ever go to Dodger Stadium, you know, you got the atmosphere of the Dodger dogs. And, you know.
The beach balls.
You got to love the beach balls. And there can be scoring at any time, and more often than not, there is. I mean, you're not going to see a 0-0 game in baseball, you know, too often. Eventually, someone's going to score and win, but I mean, you know, the 1-0, 2-0, they don't happen too much in baseball. There's enough scoring that goes on, I think, in baseball to kind of keep the popularity, unlike, you know, hockey and soccer. And also, here's a big thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey and soccer, I mean, to me, they're impossible to understand. I mean, I'm just lost.
Right.
I mean, you have, like, the icing and hooking, and then you know, soccer, I can never tell when a player goes offsides. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it's
insane.
It's,
you know, and there's, like, you know, there's one shot on goal, and then that's it. That's the excitement. You know, and then we start again. You know, baseball, there's just more action. I mean,
I will say, and then we promise we'll get back to the topic at hand. Octopus.
Oh yes.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about hockey is, having worked at the illustrious Madison Square Garden in New York City.
For our readers who don't, for our listeners who don't know this, real quick, is that, you know, Mike was a tour guide at Madison Square Garden back in his New York days. You know, and you know, we obviously have the New York Rangers of the National
That's
Hockey League
right.
that play there, among other teams.
One of the original six teams, in fact, of the National Hockey League.
Pointless and useless facts, but continue.
Well, it's a thing that matters, then.
Ah, good play out of words. I like that. Okay, so I'm sorry, you had a point.
Yes. Well, namely that I, you know, had the fortune of attending quite a number of hockey games as a result, you know, just sort of as a casual onlooker. And the thing I will say is the crowd environment in a hockey game is unbelievable. It is so much fun.
I think it's unbelievable because they want to see fights.
Yes.
They don't want to actually see the actual sport of hockey. They're not they're and that's another thing about
interesting.
Hockey.
Interesting.
About hockey is that, you know, there's like controlled fighting, which just again boggles me. Like, if you ever see a fight that occurs in hockey, the referees actually get the other players out of the way with this whole like let them settle it on their own type thing.
Right.
You know, and then they throw the helmets and they start fighting each other, and it's when, like, you know, one guy's about to get the other guy's jaw broken, you know, that the referee stepped in. I mean, that to me, that's the first thing you ban, you know, even before the octopus toss.
Yes.
I mean, that's just, I mean, I like fights as much as the next guy. When there's a bench clearing brawl in baseball, I always watch. I find it exciting.
Absolutely.
But I mean, to you're basically condoning such actions. You know, you're basically saying, you know, let the players beat each other up, you know, because that's what the fans are going for. And again, I mean, when you have a sport that where the fans are going simply for the fights and that sport's not boxing, keep that sport in Canada. Huh. That's what I say.
This is a topic for another show.
We can go on and on about this.
What I was going to say about hockey and just in general, I remember on a, pardon the interruption, some time ago.
The ESPN show,
The ESPN show, yes. They were referring to the fact that at a soccer stadium, I do not know specifics, so I'm sorry to all you soccer fans, but there was a situation where basically at every home game at the stadium, right, when the team was there, they would consistently throw things onto the field while the game was going on. Like, banners would fly all over the place in-game.
And this was common?
This was common. In fact, accepted, understood, you know, expected.
This was not in America, right?
I don't believe so.
I hope not.
But not expected by the other, you know, expected by the other
team. This is why the U.S. is considered, like, the most, you know, culturally advanced society in the world, because we don't condone such things. We're not so rooted in tradition. We're able to evolve past, you know, the Neanderthalic views that, you know, some of the other countries' sports, you know, kind of adopted.
The thing I will say, the point I was trying to make, though, here, is that the octopus throwing strikes me, and maybe not so much you, but it strikes me as an ultimate home court advantage situation. When you go to Detroit and you know there's going to be octopi coming out of the stands?
It plays with your head.
That's worse than the Lakers beating the Spurs by 30 points.
It really is.
That is harsh.
That is a legitimate home court advantage, a home rink advantage in this case. And I think that's actually one of the reasons why they decided to ban it was because of the octopus gunk that inevitably would go onto the ice and, you know, give, you know, I think opposing teams a disadvantage, because obviously Detroit is used to, you know, playing with such, you know, debris on the ice.
Yes.
And I can't believe this thing has gone on for so long. So, you know, hate the NHL, hate hockey, but kudos to them for finally banning octopus twirling. Good for you. And moving on to the main topic of the day, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
PB&J.
I mean, I love it. You love it.
Indeed.
The world loves it. And for me personally, there is no better peanut butter and jelly sandwich than one that is made by mom. I mean, you know, your
Absolutely.
Mom, you know, no matter who she is, what her background, what culture you're from, always knows how to make the perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's ingrained in their DNA. They know the right amount of peanut butter, the right amount of jelly, how to cut the bread.
Indeed.
You know, it's perfect. A few weeks ago, I'm at my mom's, you know, just kind of doing some things, hanging out. I think I was picking her up from somewhere. And she asked me the magic words, would you like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And I flipped. I mean, I hadn't had one in years. Sure, absolutely. And I was, you know, looking forward to my perfect PB&J. The first thing she does, she goes into the fridge and she takes out a jar. Okay, and I've seen these in the stores, but never really registered until now. A jar that had both peanut butter and jelly mixed in. Now, personally, I think that's sacrilegious. I mean, I really, really do.
It's a travesty. It is like buying shoes with the socks sewn in.
Exactly. That's a good point. Like, why? I mean, it's
amazing.
You know, peanut butter and jelly in separate jars, to me, is like paper clips. You got it right the first time. There's no reason to kind of tinker with success. It ain't broke. Don't fix it.
Right.
Don't mix the two in. And when she showed me this jar, I asked my mom, I was like, you know, what is this? And she said, it's simpler this way. It is simpler this way. Wow. Like, the process was complicated to begin with. Wow. Like, it was so hard to buy a separate peanut butter and jelly jar, okay? And then you take your knife, you kind of, you know, swish the peanut butter on. And then – and you can take the same knife.
You can.
That's fine. I don't mind. I don't mind if a tiny bit of that jelly goes into the peanut butter jar or vice versa. Use the same knife, but keep the things in separate jars. Take the knife into the jelly, then mix it on. Don't give me – a mixture, okay? This isn't Ovaltine, okay? This is peanut butter and jelly, okay? I'm not an astronaut. I don't want this in a mix, okay? I want my traditional sandwich, my traditional peanut butter and jelly. I do not want a mix. I mean, I'm a traditionalist, okay? And I want to keep with the classics. You know, that's my view.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's my view. And another thing, and then me personally, and I know some people, you know, have disagreed with me on this. You know, I wrote about this topic a few weeks ago on our sponsor site, nevdog.blogspot.com. And, you know, it's funny. You get so much play off of this peanut butter and jelly. Everybody has an opinion. And people agreed, for the most part, that peanut butter and jelly should be in separate jars. But the thing they disagreed with was the type of bread. Okay, now the type of bread my mom used to make this sandwich was multigrain bread.
Okay.
Which, again, I think is another sacrilegious thing.
Yes.
I mean, I do not want my peanut butter and jelly on healthier, nutritious bread.
Mm.
I do not want the bread that is used on my PB&J to have nuts in it, either on the bread itself or on the crust.
Indeed.
I do not want that. I want it on plain, traditional, American white bread. I don't care about its nutritional content. I don't care if it's bad for me. I don't care if in 20 years they do a study that says too much white bread, you know, is going to explode your liver or esophagus. I want my white bread. That's the way it works for me.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people, they say agree, they want it on white bread. Some people, they say they want wheat bread. I don't see
that. You know what? Let me step in for a second here and just say, from my experience, and so maybe this will, well, I was going to say help you understand, but that doesn't quite work.
I'm open to ideas.
Okay.
But you know, I'm just saying, you know,
Very good.
I'm also rooted in tradition as
Very
well.
Good.
So you know, it's got to be a good one.
Here's the deal. What my mom always did, my mom was big on health food for me, okay, when I was growing up. Now, when I say health food, everybody, and I am talking about growing up in Los Angeles here, to her credit, we're not talking about wheat germ, okay, or anything like that. We're talking about, you know, vegetables. We're talking about things like wheat bread, okay?
Okay.
That's what happens. So I got used to peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on wheat bread.
Okay.
Now, and it's funny. Because
so you grew up with it, basically.
I did.
Okay.
The thing is the white bread... I mean, I love them on white bread. There's no question. But it's not how I grew up. It's not my main experience. Now, let me say one other thing, though, that might scare you a little bit here. And this is just from my New York days. There may still be a restaurant on the Upper West Side of Manhattan that was basically a fancy – not fancy is too strong a word. But it was a restaurant that attempted to serve up the things your mom would make for you and, you know, just the kind of things you'd have around the house in a, you know, just higher quality ingredients, right? In a more, you know, more
– Oh, I got to hear this.
You know, professional – yeah, it was manner. It was terrible. Okay, let me just say that right now. The thing they had, you know, PB&J.
And how do they serve the PB&J in a fancier upper-class style?
Let me count the ways. On a glass plate.
Oh, that's it. Okay. That
already.
Okay, I'm already out the door.
Already,
okay,
we
okay.
Have
a glass plate. Okay.
A glass plate was one. Okay. The crusts were immaculately cut. It was to the point where you thought you were having tea. You know,
okay.
In a British.
And I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
I'm okay. And my cutting, you know, does not have to be perfect on a PB&J sandwich.
No.
But I'm okay if immaculately cut.
Okay.
Okay. I can accept that.
Fine.
Okay. There's nothing.
Fine.
There's nothing wrong with
okay,
that.
Okay. Fine. The peanut butter was supposedly, you know, some fancy schmancy, you know, brand of peanut butter, perhaps even freshly made.
Oh, no.
Right
peanut
there.
Butter must, no. Peanut butter must be processed, okay? It must be processed and not, like, fat-free,
right.
Not low-fat. It must be, like, you know, your Skippy or your Jif.
Yep.
I mean, when you start tinkering with the peanut butter, I mean, you're really, that's what, it's a slippery slope.
I believe
you know?
I believe the jelly was fresh from a farm, you know, out upstate a little bit.
See, that's the thing with jelly, okay?
Yep.
Like, I've had fresh preserves before, okay,
right.
And I could almost accept the jelly.
Right.
If you leave the peanut butter alone, okay, but you, you can't, because I've never tasted peanut butter that was good that came from something other than a processed jar.
See, the thing is, the thing I'll say is with the fresh peanut, with the fresh jelly, I do think, having experienced, thanks to the wonders of college food, you know, for a random reason, excellent jelly, right? And then horrific peanut butter. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's hard to screw up jelly.
I mean, I can't really.
But I mean, like, it was really good. Like, mm-hmm. it was clearly probably from the same place mm-hmm. as this fancy restaurant got it. It was distracting. I will say that much. It certainly was a jarring taste, you mm-hmm. know, to have the peanut butter and jelly thing, where the peanut butter was of such lesser quality. I'm not knocking the peanut butter here, just of such, you know, of a lesser quality than the jelly. But no, you know, so all that kind of stuff led up to, you know, I believe, oh, the other thing that you'll love about this restaurant, because they just couldn't ignore the fact that they were a restaurant, they, of course, had to give you sides for the peanut butter.
Sides for the peanut butter? What possible sides did they give you for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Tell me it was not vegetables.
Well, there was a pickle involved.
What?
Not mistaken.
And I here's the thing. I hate cucumbers, but I love pickles.
Okay.
Like, I think pickles are great.
Mm-hmm.
With pastrami. With burgers,
right.
Even in certain instances with a hot dog, I could almost accept.
Ooh, yeah, okay,
you know?
I'll buy that.
Okay, but no, not with peanut butter and jelly. That's insane.
You know, and the thing is, what I'll never forget was I went with my uncle, who lives out in Manhattan on the Upper West Side, and, you know, with a couple of friends and his friends, so, you know, it was a relatively big group, and we all sat around, and it was just so much of a disappointment. It was so...
Well, if I see a pickle next to my PB&J sandwich, I'm going to be disappointed.
The whole experience... You know, we also got things... I'm trying to remember exactly what else. I think we got macaroni and cheese.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. Maybe a burger.
Okay.
You know, like, it was an attempt to go back to simplicity and to go back to the, you know, to your house, but...
Which you can't do if you give you sides and put it on a glass plate.
And you can't do if it's not your mom.
No. There you go. That's a very good point.
You know?
And if you can't make, you know... Do it with your mom, you know, making the food. Then what you really need, okay, is you need to really – it's a presentation, okay? You need the paper plates. You need the little glass of forks. You need the milk, you know?
Yep.
It's the little things, okay? You can't just, you know, tweak the entire system and put it on glass plates and put pickles next to the sandwich and, you know, God knows what else they do. And, you know, and then you really see the immaculate, you know, cutting crust, you know, is really kind of stands out in a very distracting way. You make your own homemade peanut butter, which, I mean, again, that to me is the last straw. You know, you want to give your fresh jelly, fine, but ultimately this just does not work. But I think there's one thing I think we can agree on more than mm-hmm. anything else. Multigrain bread. No. Not for the sandwich.
No.
I mean, it just didn't work. And again, I was disappointed. And, you know, to me, PB&J, separate jars, you know, for sure.
Right.
I like white bread. You want to do wheat bread, that's fine. No multigrain bread. I think, you know, we've definitely established that.
Now, the thing I wanted to throw out here also, that this might scare you a little bit, is that when I was growing up, more than PB&J, okay, was the experience of peanut butter, okay. Now don't freak out.
Okay.
And honey,
okay.
Sometimes coupled, even though often not exactly the same, but peanut butter and bananas.
Okay, you know, and I've actually heard a lot of people, you know, talk about this on nevdog.blogspot.com
okay.
about, you know, peanut butter and honey. In fact, a lot of people have actually raved about peanut butter and honey, and I mean, I've never tried it.
Okay.
You know, I'd be willing to give it a shot, but a lot of people have heard that. And I have heard about the peanut butter and bananas, and I honestly can see that. Okay. I can see that. I mean, that, you know, you're trying to, you know, you're... They've been around long enough that I don't think it's considered to be kind of tweaking with tradition. I think it is more under the rules of alternative. I can accept that. There's a difference between alternative and just coming out with a completely, you know, different dimension of a perfect system.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you want to kind of, you know, you want to add extensions to the system. That's fine. It's like a civilization expanding. But when you try to create a whole new civilization of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, that to me is when you lose me. To me, it's akin, you know, to the British and the Americans, you know, when the British started charging the taxes. And you saw how that worked out. You know, the Americans kind of, you know, annexed themselves after a bloody war. And that's what's going to happen eventually, is that the peanut butter and jelly purists, you know, are going to fight with these, you know, New York Upper Side restaurants who insist upon putting these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on glass plates served with pickles. Okay, there's going to be it's going to be ugly. It's going to be unnecessary. Ultimately, I think the traditionalists are going to win because they care more. You know, but there's going to be bloodshed. ultimately. You know, unless you know, we can reason together and say no pickles, no multi-grain bread, and keep it in separate jars.
I think we have a clear message then to the listeners of this podcast. You know, last time we discussed how thank you cards, right, should be something. You know, we had sort of a mission for people.
And we're going to get to that in a minute.
We'll get to that to figure out, you know, how to you know, what level requires a thank you card. However, what we definitely need to say here is that everybody, there is going to be a war coming.
It's inevitable.
The peanut butter and jelly war, or sandwich rather, excuse me, war. And the thing we have to say is, choose your side.
And choose them wisely.
Choose it wisely, and figure out exactly where you stand.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Because it's coming. It's inevitable.
And if you don't know where you stand, you're going to be run over.
Yeah, or you better get out of the line of fire right quick.
That's
you know?
Right.
Go hide in Canada with the octopus-throwing people who are, you know, trying to keep that tradition alive, you know, outside Detroit.
All I'll say is for Nevin and I, and I think I can speak for Nevin here, you know what side we're on. We're on the traditionalist side.
That's right.
That's what's going to win, okay? It's what should win.
And we're ready to go. We're armed. We're armed, we're ready, we're dangerous. Peanut butter and jelly, the war's coming.
Bring it.
Now, we mentioned thank you cards a minute or two ago, and, you know, we always encourage, you know, letters, you know, from our listeners, and there's a couple ways, you know, you can send us your comments. One, send us an email to mikeandnev@yahoo.com, mikeandnev@yahoo.com. Send us your emails, questions, comments, concerns. If we like it, we'll read it on the air. You can also go to our actual podcast website, mikeandnev.blogspot.com. Leave us comments there. And, you know, again, if we like it, we'll go on the air.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we actually had one from Christy in Alhambra about thank you cards. And she writes, "Dear Mike and Nev, I loved your podcast so much on thank you cards that I'm going to send you a thank you card in response." And again, this was from Christy in Alhambra. And interesting thing to me, she's just not getting it. She's not really getting the concept of the non-thank you card phrase.
No,
you know?
She's not. I mean, she clearly, you know, Christy, as much as we appreciate you sending us a comment and everything, clearly you have not taken the time to think about what level of thanks requires a thank you card. Mm-hmm. You know, us doing a podcast that you can download for free and listen to on your own time. No, it doesn't.
It does not warrant a thank you card.
Right.
Now, if we gave you a blood transfusion, you know, or a kidney,
Or if this podcast cured cancer.
Then I think a thank you card is warranted. But, you know, for right now, you know, as much as you love our podcast, again, we appreciate that.
Absolutely.
No thank you card is necessary. Please, you know, because you're just sending the movement back. Now,
Also, I should just note, she doesn't know where to send it.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
So I feel bad because she just may send it to some guy named Nevin.
Who, and you know, and Nevin, which is a Dutch name, so you know, you're going to get to the, what's the Dutch country? Denmark? I honestly have no idea.
Okay.
So some guy in Europe is gonna get this thank you card about this podcast, and let me go, she does not understand, because Christine Alhambra, as much as she loved the podcast, has not yet gotten the message that thank you cards in this instance aren't necessary. Now, the thing is, I was actually at a wedding yesterday. My friend Sylvia from college got married yesterday to a guy named Mike.
Congratulations,
and,
guys.
And, you know, they were making their rounds, you know, kind of, you know, thank you for coming, you know, as a husband and wife, you know, often do to all around the tables. And when she got to me, we were actually talking about, you know, wedding gifts for a couple of minutes. And she said, "Now, Nevin, does this mean I do not have to give you a thank you card in return?" Because she even pointed out, and it's a handwritten note. And to me, that pleased me. Because
that's
at
good.
Least one person's getting it.
That's good.
At least Sylvia in North Hollywood is understanding that for gift cards, a thank you card is not necessary.
You know, I mean, that's great. And the thing is, I'll just say, it can start with one person. Right, and that one person can tell another, and it will just grow from there.
Well, we better hope so, because it literally is starting with one person so far. Sylvia North Hollywood, she gets it. We're happy. Thank you very much. So again, mikeandnev@yahoo.com, or leave us a comment at mikeandnev.blogspot.com. That's also where you can find all of our podcasts. Send us a comment. Leave us a note. If we like it, or we can make fun of it, we'll talk about it on the air.
Absolutely.
There you go. So, guys, don't forget to visit our sponsor, nevdog.blogspot.com. Nevdog.blogspot.com. Once you read those blogs, the world will never be the same. Guarantee it. NEVDOGG.blogspot.com.
And again, check out Mike and Nev, MikeAndNev.blogspot.com for the official website of this podcast where you can listen to it. We can listen to it streamed or download it to listen at your convenience.
You practiced that, huh?
Not really, actually.
Really? That came out very, very, you know, nice and professional.
I've done voiceover.
That's true. Yeah, that was very, very professional. So again, guys, thank you for listening to Things That Matter with Mike and Nev. Until then, peace out.